plethora of available options can make our health decisions complicated. Welcome to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with Stacy Starling. Our program is designed for you to question, take charge of your health, and find out which resources in healthcare and human services are available for you. Now, here's your host, Stacy Starling.
Welcome and thank you for listening. This is your host, Stacy Starling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. On today's show, we're adding to our understanding of transpersonal therapy, neuropsychology, and psychotherapy. Joining me is Dr. Harriet Mall. Dr. Mall is a licensed clinical psychologist, licensed professional counselor, and certified trauma specialist. If you have any questions after today's show, you can contact Dr. Mall at drharrietmall@gmail.com. That's drharrietmall@gmail.com. You'll also be able to find Dr. Mall's contact information and other important links on our website, starlingcenter.org, on the radio tab. Remember to like the Starling Center on Facebook, connect with me on LinkedIn, follow me on Twitter, and all these links can be found under our show links. Dr. Mall, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Stacy, for having me.
Yeah, so happy to have you here today and discuss these important topics. I thought we might begin by having you share your evolution as a therapist.
Well, I actually was an artist. My bachelor's degree is in fine arts, and I decided to become an art therapist. I had an equal love of psychology and wanted to pursue, and that long ago there was no training. I live in Michigan, so there was no training here, and I pursued more of a master's in developmental psychology is how it evolved. And through doing that, I was hired in a rehabilitation facility to work with people who had suffered from severe brain injury and debilitating disabilities. And so we were working to try to help these individuals have a better quality of life. And in doing so, we learned all kinds of neuro training techniques, brain exercises, and this was back in the 80s. So it was a new emerging time, and we were just experimenting. It was all very experiential, and it gave great results. We had several therapists that we added on, movement, music, dance, so we had expressive therapies, got to have my foray with the art therapy, and started a program that was very, very beneficial. And during that time, working with these individuals with traditional therapies as well, speech therapy and occupational therapy. So I was working with psychiatrists and all sorts of professionals in the rehabilitation field. And really, occupational therapy taught us so much about the sensory aspect of what was going on in a person's psyche and as far as their disability, and we were finding tremendous results. Well, after many years of doing that, I became a neuropsychologist, got training in doing evaluations. So neuropsychology is sort of a brain-behavior relationship study. And so we look at how people take in information, process information, and feed it back. So in doing thousands of neuropsychs and watching people's responses to this material, it started to really show me that these individuals were suffering from significant trauma underneath all that they were experiencing, and that the trauma was really not being addressed. And so it was in my discovery and understanding of trauma that led me to EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And that is a trauma treatment technique and an approach, actually, to the healing of trauma. So my evolution went from developmental psychology to in rehabilitation to working with somatic experiences, the body, the sensory system, and then into combining that into the trauma work.
And gosh. Go ahead.
That was probably in the 90s. By the 90s, I learned EMDR in 1993, and it really led me away from being a neuropsychologist into the field of psychotherapy. And that's when I really began my work as a psychotherapist.
Such a rich background in bringing so many different paradigms of thought and approaches to health and well-being within the field of therapy. I love it. It's exciting. So this show is going to be fantastic because you're going to talk to us both about some of these traditional approaches and some of the alternative approaches.
Correct.
Which is fantastic. Give us a real broad understanding. Why don't we begin with, I always like to jump off and start with more interesting topics that are alternative because I think that that's sometimes new and different to folks. So maybe we begin by talking about transpersonal therapy.
Transpersonal therapy. Well, it's a broad field and it's a really distilled down is the spiritual aspect of our life. You know, we have the cognitive and we separate, you know, in Western culture, we separate everything out into segments. And as I was talking about in rehabilitation, we work with speech, then we work with occupational. But it's bringing together all of those things together in as honoring ourselves as a person, understanding who we are, where we come from. So it's a spiritual connection, if you will, and not religious, so that it is apart from religion, but it's what lights us up. It's what gives us our energy. It's what creates those connections that are there for us to engage meaningfully in the world and with others and with ourselves. So transpersonal actually is a connected to humanistic psychology, and the person that's really sort of taken it over and changed it is Ken Wilber. He does integral therapy and approach to life, and so he's sort of subsumed a lot of the transpersonal work, but so many people are working in that domain that are quote-unquote alternative because it's an aspect that Western science, Western medicine overlooks. And again, going back to my background, I have a strong foundation in Eastern philosophy and Eastern medicine, studying macrobiotics for almost 35 years now. And that's the Taoist tradition. Mm-hmm. So it's looking at the complementary and antagonistic forces that are in operation within everything and everyone. And people know the terms yin and yang. Well, those are the complementary and antagonistic forces that are in operation at all times. So when we think of transpersonal, we are a conduit of this energy and this ongoing complementary antagonistic operation. And so as a transpersonal therapist, we look at our place, where we are, our level of consciousness, our connection to higher sources, our connection to the earth, to our groundedness. So it's a complete holistic approach to psychotherapy.
Tell me what that engagement might look like. I hear you talking about this complete connection, but you know what unfolds in the relationship between you and an individual receiving service?
Well, actually, in the service is, you know, whoever comes in, we work with their being, their energy, and what they need at the time. And sometimes people come in for one reason and discover all kinds of other reasons that help them to grow and transcend some of the more bothersome aspects. So, for instance, trouble at work, difficulty with a boss, having issues, you know, at home, in interpersonal relationships. They hearken back to lots of experiences that we've had, and in our body is connected those experiences. So we have a roadmap. Each individual person is different. So the approach is only based on what the person needs at the time. And sometimes there's, you know, there's many ancillary, not sometimes, often, people need a range of services because there's physical aspects as well. I'm not a physician. I'm a psychologist. So I consult with, and in my practice, I'm happy to have other practitioners, naturopaths, holistic physician, massage and body workers, and energy psychology workers to help those connections. So people are connected to themselves. It's not about me. It's about helping them direct them, or helping to direct them, connect with themselves. And that's really all our responsibility. And that's really our goal, is to be able to really understand ourselves and our sensations and vibrations.
Outside of Ken Wilber, who else comes to mind who's been very influential in your work in this area of transpersonal therapy?
Well, you know, Carl Jung didn't say transpersonal therapy, but he was much more of a spiritual and an abstract symbolic meaning making. And Viktor Frankl was someone who was a psychiatrist in Austria at the time of the Holocaust, and he was imprisoned in a concentration camp for probably 5 or 6 years. And during that time, what he studied about human nature is that we are incredibly resilient. That's the most important thing to always remember, is our sense of resilience, and that we, by making meaning out of our experiences, we can have a very rich and deep life that is extremely fulfilling. So Viktor Frankl was able to do that in the Holocaust, in a concentration camp. So often we use him as a wonderful example and model of someone who was able to transform a horrific experience and make meaning out of it.
Interesting. I know that Wilber's also very much connected to integral, an integral worldview. How are these two related and or not? How are they different, transpersonal and integral?
I think Wilber... transpersonal and integral?
Yes.
I think that is the mission of Wilber and his work, which is very dense and hard sometimes for people to really understand. But he's really speaking of the very same things. I mean, the good news is that all of these approaches are good, and any one of these approaches is wonderful when someone can connect to it. Again, it comes back to our connection. So if we resonate with something and we are learning information that is helping us grow, we know that. We have intuition about that. So the transpersonal helps us to understand those connections, which then frees us. Our energy is free moving through our body, and then we're able to connect to higher and bigger sources of information that help us to grow and move through life.
So based on what you were just saying, talk to me about the role of energy in psychology.
Energy. Well, Einstein, who gave us the theory of energy, told us that really everything is vibration. Everything is vibrating at a frequency. So we know that. That's a scientific fact. So often what happens in transpersonal psychology or other kinds of alternative of therapies is that, you know, it's unscientific, it's ungrounded. But what I love about energy work is that it's very much scientifically proven, and we know that we are energy beings. Our body consists of energy, and it's magnetic, and it circulates, and it is, we have a biofield. We have areas around and near to our body and within our body that vibrate based on what experiences we're having. So when we understand that energy and the energy around us and how it feels inside of us, we then have much more power and much more ability and capacity to understand, make meaning, grow, and be able to reprocess, actually, and now understand how to manage those sensations, those vibrations.
In your practice, is energy psychology, is it a technique? Is it a space that you hold for the relationship to unfold? How might you describe that for the layperson who's not had that experience yet?
Yes, and I think this, what you said, Stacey, the space for the work to unfold is the key element in any therapy process, because the person has to feel comfortable first and foremost. And so we're uncomfortable in our body. We have to go somewhere to get assistance. And that first important part is feeling comfortable within that space. So yes, absolutely. When that happens, depending on the individual, you know, choices are made. But doing energy work, as you asked, is can be done through tapping. Lots of people know about tapping. Mm-hmm. It's a emotional freedom technique, came from thought field therapy, which was originally the first. Roger Callahan really conceived of the fact that thoughts were energetic and lie in the body. So if we use acupuncture to deal with pain and discomfort in the body, in the soma, then we can use touching, tapping, and acupressure points to help move energy through the system. So it's, if you think about energy that is conflicted, or it's anything on the negative side, then what happens is it tightens. Our body tightens. We get stiff, and so the nervous system responds to that and vibrates with that and holds whatever information at that time in the nervous system and stores it in the body, because the body always remembers whatever has happened. So what subsequent to that, we'll have experiences that will then remind us of that, and we'll have a reaction. And sometimes we're conscious of it, and sometimes we're not. And we will react in ways that we don't understand. Why did I do that? How come I said that? And so we don't understand those aspects of our body. So the therapeutic relationship helps to begin to uncover how we really do understand that. And that's what people don't teach us.
Harriet, I'm gonna have to segue us to a break. And when we return, we're gonna pick up our conversation, and we're gonna talk about neuropsychology, trauma therapy, and EMDR.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The Starling Center is pleased to announce the latest video course in its e-learning platform, Person-Centered Thinking. The primary aim of a person-centered approach is to redress the current imbalance between the practitioner and the person at the point of service in healthcare and human services. Person-centeredness is an important balance of medical services and social solutions. Each person's wants and needs dictates the person-centered plan that guides the delivery of care or defines the plan for supports and services. This call to action is emphasized in emerging policy, promoting culture change in the service systems that provide care and supports and services for older adults and people who have disabilities. Join Stacey Starling for this in-depth virtual classroom experience. This course expands the conversational space to include cross-disciplinary practitioners across the continuum. The course provides continuing education credits for nurses, nursing home administrators, and social workers. Log on to starling-elearning.org for more information and register today.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Joining me today is Dr. Harriet Mall, and we're adding to the conversation on transpersonal therapy, neuropsychology, and psychotherapy. Dr. Mall holds a certification as a trauma specialist and is a diplomat, board-certified expert in traumatic stress, and you often serve as a consulting neuropsychologist. In the first segment of today's show, Dr. Mall, you were talking about neuropsychology as brain-behavior relationship. It's a study of the relationship between brain behavior, yes?
Yes.
All right. So help us to connect deeper ways around neuropsychology and its role in the therapeutic process.
Well, neuropsychology was developed really in my training was Luria. It was Alexander Luria was a Russian psychologist, physicist, and understood the relationship of movement, development in the body. And he was quite controversial because everything was so subjective that he couldn't really be pinned down. But he watched, just sort of as Piaget did about development in children, he watched development in injury to the brain and nervous system. And so through that, many studies were developed and systematized. And unfortunately, as in any systematized system, there's a lot of room for error as well. So people fall through the cracks. Their, you know, evaluations are only as good as the information they provide. And so looking at an individual from a neuropsychological system is a battery of tests usually people go through, paper and pencil kinds of tasks, and find out how they respond to different kinds of information. And it's usually cognitive and, a feedback from an evaluator to a client. And through that information, it tells us how our brain is functioning, how our nervous system is functioning. Hopefully a good neuropsychology evaluation would include a sensory system evaluation. And it is in that information that helps people understand when they've had some sort of injury and or disability, so that we can, and as our approach was always to use as strength-based. So people have lots of disability, but they also have a lot of strength in other areas. So we would use strength to help disabilities. And basically, that's the philosophy that without any obvious injuries, I mean, people have, you know, minor injuries that they might not even know about. But the idea is that using our strengths helps shore up whatever weaknesses we have. And that is where therapy can help tremendously.
So what's the purpose of trauma therapy based on your experience?
The trauma is really underlying any mental illness and condition. Majority of people, you know, my guess is about 99.999% of people with mental illness have underlying trauma associated with this condition. Lots of it is genetic, but it is repeated trauma over a period of time and creates and changes biology. And that's what we understand about neuropsychology. It started to inform us about the fact that our physiology actually changes when there's traumatic events. And so it sets up a whole system of the body adapting to a trauma. So we have to be able to tolerate it. And as I said before, we're incredibly resilient. And the problem is that we store this information often in a pretty dysfunctional way. And so we get triggered by things in the environment, and then we have some sort of reaction. So people kind of stuff, our daily troubles, we stuff and we try to put them away. And I kind of use the closet metaphor of stuffing the closet, and our back is up against the door, and there's no more room to put anything. So we have to sort of move away from that door, let it all kind of fall out on the floor, build shelves, and start to look at what the elements are. And once you start to really look at things in a way that's safe, you begin to make sense and, again, make meaning out of many of the experiences.
Can you give a couple of examples? You were talking about our physiology and our biology changes over time and that the body adapts to trauma. Can you just give us an example of what that might look like for somebody that you have worked with in the past?
Sure. Well, I think that, you know, what happens is people become hypervigilant, you know, is startling, very uncomfortable, anxiety, panic. All of those things are body system reactions and responses, because the body is still in a trauma mode. So when the body experiences a trauma, the body is basically saying, I will protect you, and that won't happen again. And so the information is then frozen and stuck in the nervous system. And so what it looks like is a reaction that maybe immediately, but most often with somebody who's highly traumatized, won't even understand their response. And people will be around them will be very surprised at, why did you do that? Or, you know, why did you say that? And it's because it's a defense. It's a protection. So when we understand where that comes from, we can start to reassess and reprocess, and that's where the EMDR comes in as one of the treatment techniques to help.
Talk to us about EMDR. What does that stand for?
Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. So that's why we call it EMDR. And it is developed by Francine Shapiro in the mid-80s, and she was a researcher and having a troubling event, and she herself experienced a shift in her awareness and sensation about her own issues that had been going on, and recognized that she was moving her eyes back and forth in a pattern, right to left, left to right, and that it seemed to help reduce some of the distress. So she got a lot of her colleagues together. She was working at the Veterans Administration Hospital, and she got a lot of colleagues together, and they started to practice. And it was in that really this very controversial at the time therapy has become an evidence-based, on the National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs. And it is allowing the relevant memory, the information that the memory has in its awareness to work with some of the other aspects in the body. And that's what I liked as a therapist so much. It was a body-focused therapy where it was connecting the person to the sensation in the body and allowing this movement, this eye movement, to process the information. So why eye movement? Well, it's all a theory. It's accelerated information processing is the theory. And the accelerated information processing happens when we sleep. So often, you know, we go to sleep and our eyes move back and forth under the rapid eye movement during the sleep phase. And that's when we're dreaming. That's when we're connecting to all our information. All of our resources in our nervous system are reorganizing, sort of filing and storing the information. And when we wake up, we're renewed, we're regenerated. And if we don't sleep or we lack REM sleep, we have a trouble processing information. Our nervous system, our cognition is unable to really take in any more information. So that's why people who don't sleep become psychotic, because we can't take in any more. So the eye movement in sleep time allows this sensation, this information processing to store all of that information. When it's dysfunctional, when it doesn't make sense, we can have nightmares, bad dreams, all of that. And so we have to be able to, we process. That's why people are so fascinated with their dreams. It's information. It's unconscious information. But EMDR is allowing us to process in real time. It's not any hypnosis or any kind of strange process. It's taking all the thoughts, feelings, sensations, and the harvesting that body information, which is so essential in making meaning and helping to transform an experience.
So does this happen in relationship with you in an office visit? How does this unfold?
EMDR is an approach to therapy. It looks at the comprehensive, holistic approach to the person and helping the person be able to prepare for that processing. And the beginning phases are preparation. So people learn how to contain their emotions. Sometimes panic takes over and it's so difficult. So there's some skill building and learning how to manage panic. And during that time, you can use many different techniques. I will rely on many, many kinds of techniques to help people contain visualization, relaxation, mindfulness, tapping, chakra meditations. So all of those things can help contain, relax, and prepare the system to take on the work that the body needs to reprocess. So again, you had asked about what it looks like. You know, often people are in a feedback loop and they don't even realize it. They're still reacting to things very similarly over and over again, and it's not changing. So when that happens, it's being able to help the system stop that feedback loop. And it's not because somebody's going crazy. It's because their nervous system has taken on a responsibility to protect them. And sometimes it's not functional, and we call it dysfunctional. And so we have to help change that direction and that energy flow. And when that happens, energy is flowing again. People are much more relieved and can tolerate the experience.
Are there situations where EMDR is the most beneficial approach to health and wellness?
The EMDR works most beneficially in trauma and single incident in, you know, trauma is very common. Using EMDR in a critical incident situation has been very effective, and mostly complex trauma is EMDR is very effective, and it's effective when the person has been prepared properly. It is rapid in the way that people can process, but it takes some time to get to that stage where processing can occur. So again, it's within a therapeutic relationship. It's building a relationship with the therapist and having the client understand what they're going to work on, what they're experiencing. And so it's a lot of education prior to the actual processing work.
Would you use this approach with children as well as adults? Obviously, it's for adults, but would you use this approach with children or not
it
advisable?
It works extremely well with children, and that's a specialty all unto its own. But children, you know, as their experiences are not as complex and confusing, so they're very quick to understand because the nervous system wants to heal. The nervous system wants to repair. And so with children, it goes much quicker most of the time because they have less complexity in their lives.
We have about 2 minutes before we go to break, and I was wondering, part of your credentials include your practice as an EMDR Institute and Humanitarian Assistant Program Facilitator and an EMDRIA-approved consultant and regional coordinator. That all sounds very impressive. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Okay, well, EMDR is an institute led by Francine Shapiro, and that is her institute for the study of EMDR. She also does training in EMDR and has trainers and also facilitators. And what facilitators do, and that's what I am, is someone who comes to the training to help the clinicians when they're learning the process of learning EMDR. So it's sort of a helper to the trainer. So often we get into smaller groups and people can have their own experiences practicing and working with EMDR if they're in a training, you know, situation. The Humanitarian Assistance Program is developed from the Institute. It's its own foundation, and it provides EMDR therapy to either underprivileged or all over the world in crisis situations. So often people go into a crisis, whether it be a natural disaster, war, and use EMDR to help people with their traumatic in the immediate time as crisis. And then the training is also provided to those agencies that are in need, that have clinicians that would like to have trauma training, and EMDR will come in and do low-cost training for the facility. So then as a facilitator, we go in to help with that as well.
Okay, we're going to head to break, and when we come back, we'll pick up our conversation, we'll address some frequently asked questions, and Dr. Mall will give us some advice on how we find out more about all of these approaches to health and well-being.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The Starling Center is pleased to announce the latest video course in its e-learning platform, Person-Centered Thinking. The primary aim of a person-centered approach is to redress the current imbalance between the practitioner and the person at the point of service in healthcare and human services. Person-centeredness is an important balance of medical services and social solutions. Each person's wants and needs dictates the person-centered plan that guides the delivery of care or defines the plan for supports and services. This call to action is emphasized in emerging policy, promoting culture change in the service systems that provide care and supports and services for older adults and people who have disabilities. Join Stacy Starling for this in-depth virtual classroom experience. This course expands the conversational space to include cross-disciplinary practitioners across the continuum. The course provides continuing education credits for nurses, nursing home administrators, and social workers. Log on to starling-elearning.org for more information and register today.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Joining me today is Dr. Harriet Mull, and we're adding to the conversation on transpersonal therapy, neuropsychology, and psychotherapy. Before the break, we were discussing trauma therapy in EMDR. In our last segment today, Dr. Mull will address some frequently asked questions, but prior to getting to those questions, I wanted to take an opportunity and ask, how can people find out more about these different approaches to therapy? We've talked about energy therapy. We've talked about EMDR. We've talked about transpersonal therapy. What are some resources, Dr. Mull? How can people find out more?
Okay. Well, the first one that you mentioned is energy psychology. And there's an association. It's called the Association for Comprehensive Energy Psychology. It's ACEP, A-C-E-P. And it's energypsychology.org is its website. And there you can find practitioners, you can find information all about what energy psychology is, and again, practitioners in your local areas. Also, EMDR is the institute is emdr.com, and that's the institute. And then there's another organization, the EMDRIA, which is the EMDR International Association. So that's the membership organization for those of us that are EMDR practitioners. And so they have a website. It's emdria.org. And they also have lists of practitioners in your area. There's practitioners, there's people who are members, and you want to look for people who have had full training, preferably from the Institute-approved training. And there are, as you had asked me about consultant, I had mentioned about facilitators as a consultant. What consultants do is help therapists learn the techniques of EMDR and use it in their practice. So I do that as well.
Okay, so good.
Yeah, if you go to that list on those websites, you will find just type in your state, and often you will get the whole list of anyone that is practicing in the state.
Great. And you were also saying you're wanting to make sure that you have somebody who is certified in this area of practice. Is this how can you be assured that your practitioner is certified?
Well, in the EMDRIA, the EMDRIA.org website, it will say what level of training this person has had. So someone, okay. You know, and then my recommendation is always if somebody is in your area, it sounds right to you, that you make a phone call and talk on the phone with the therapist. You can often really hear their approach and whether or not that would be somebody you would want to work with. So, and as a therapist, it's always good to talk to a client because then you know whether or not you can help them, or then, as I often do, direct them to someone maybe closer to them or with more of a specialty in an area that they might need.
All right, great. Good resources. We'll be sure to put those up on our website as well.
Wonderful.
After today's show. Yeah, so people can look there on the radio tab at starlingcenter.org. In the meantime, let's get to some of these frequently asked questions. A question that I have here in front of me is, can anyone benefit from therapy? Do you think that anyone can benefit from therapy?
I think so. I think that learning more about ourselves, learning how we think and feel in relationship to our life and personal growth, I think giving yourself an hour to spend time focusing on yourself is a gift. You know, it really is, because it helps us grow exponentially.
I think one of the most fascinating things that you've shared today is your overall philosophy of it is also a method or an approach to growth and wellness, developing more into the person that we're meant to become. And I believe that you even used the language, a sense of self-reliance and a meaning-making process. And so I think that that dispels some of the myths that maybe we have had presented to us in our past, right?
Absolutely. My goal is always to help people connect with themselves so that you don't need me. You have yourself. You're the best resource and the best friend you have.
Great. And so it's also just an approach to wellness, which I think is fantastic. A different perspective on that. How does psychotherapy factor into the overall health of a person? Is there anything you'd like to add to that? That's another question that popped up, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to add to as necessary.
Well, I think that, you know, when we look at health, that what we think we manifest, and what our thoughts become. You know, manifest, they become things. And we sometimes, as we talked about in trauma, we get in a loop and, you know, really, really frighten ourselves to a point where we can't unwind or we don't understand. And having two people work on behalf of one person. So, you know, a therapist is there as I see myself as a mirror and as an assistant. One of my supervisors many years ago said that he felt like a midwife waiting for possibilities to be born, which I always loved, because it's so true. We are there as a witness and a guide, and people are amazing. Healing is very, very easy to do when a person feels connected and on the right track. So when we get stuck, we really just need someone, a guide, to help us move through and understand more objectively.
I love that imagery, the midwife waiting for possibilities to unfold. A gentleman that I've crossed paths with often used the phrase, my life is one of possibility, not disability.
There you go.
Isn't that fantastic way to look
fantastic.
At
it? Fantastic. Because it is. I mean, we all have the possibility to transform, and as you said, into the person that we want to be. And it doesn't have to be a dream. It can be a reality by setting the intention and moving forward. And that's sometimes the hardest part. And so that's where I notice that trauma gets in the way. Trauma stops the body from being able to move forward. And, you know, it's really getting that gut sensation and the head sensation to be in agreement. because when those are not in agreement, we're stuck. And when we learn to mediate all of that energy in between our gut and our head, and of course our heart, that is where transformation happens.
In speaking about trauma issues, another question that has popped up and I have here in front of me is, what is your perspective on, can I work through my trauma issues alone without therapy? What's your perspective on that?
It's certainly, I would not say to someone that they can't. If they believe they can and they're self-directed and guiding themselves and finding that they're feeling better, that's wonderful. That's a gift. I think what happens because of it's a physiological reaction. It's not that we're stupid or can't do something. It's because our body is protecting us despite what we want. So sometimes that's the impediment. That's the part that gets people so stuck and wound up that they can't see that, the forest through the trees. That's when therapy is really essential.
You know, I've heard you use the phrase trauma is subjective. Would you address that?
Trauma is completely subjective because, you know, the experience that you or that I have, we could have the same kind of experience and have a completely different reaction. So each person is individual, and one person's trauma is not a trauma for someone else, or a huge trauma could, you know, look very minor. It's a subjective sensation that people have, that their body responded to, and we have to honor that within ourselves. Francine Shapiro always talked about big T's and little T's, big T traumas, you know, rape, sexual abuse, violence. We all see that as a gigantic T. And then small T's, you know, the emotional, being excluded, having trouble making our way in life over and over again, little T's, we could call them. And so when we make a judgment like that, we minimize those little T's can add up to way bigger trauma than a big T. Does that make sense?
Oh, it sure does.
Yeah. So those little T's over a period of time are very dangerous. And as we talked about before, very dangerous to our physical health as well, because over time the body cannot continue to handle that level of stress. Our neurochemicals start to react and react and react over and over in the same ways, which then cause damage to our system and our body. So we want to help remove. So those little things where, you know, embarrassed by my fourth grade teacher, you know, can keep cropping up over and over again in life throughout life. And you know, to discover that those are some of the things that were the triggers, help people to relax and have greater ease. And again, that's what it's about. It's about growth and possibility.
And so recognizing some of those triggers and then perhaps a patterned way of response that then keeps that trauma in place is what I'm hearing you say. Is that accurate?
And it's a it's a physiological pattern of response. So mm-hmm. It's not that we can, you know, through an act of will. I mean, we can do cognitive behavioral therapy, which works very well because it sets the stage, but it doesn't get to the body. The body says, okay, yeah, you can repeat that sentence all day long.
Right.
But I know otherwise. So we want to honor and respect our body. And in Western medicine, that is, the two things don't go together. So it's very important to be holistic in the approach of the mind and body and addressing the symptoms and the system together, heal those traumas.
So is that an expected outcome that we, in approaching therapy, as we've discussed here today, the end goal certainly is to heal, but is that expected for all people will find healing in approaching it?
I think, again, healing will be subjective. You know,
okay.
It's, you know, what is healing? You know, that's, you know, a greater sense of ease, I think, is really what everyone is always looking for. You know, a greater sense of peace inside and being comfortable with what is, even when it's not good, even when it's uncomfortable, but understanding it and being able to accept it. So if that's healing, then yes, you know, it's a hard thing. We can't really say heal completely, because even when we have a scab, you know, sometimes there is a distinction there. There is something there that we know, like on the skin, we know that something happened there. So we want to honor and respect all our experiences. They give us so much information. The negative ones have volumes of information to teach us. And when we shine that light in that dark, we illuminate so much, and then our body illuminates. We rise up. We feel stronger and more resilient.
So one of the things you talk about with your own practice is functional objectives using integrative, collaborative, and transpersonal therapies. My understanding of that would be that, you know, as you're talking about our inner life, so really spiraling in and being very sensitively aware of all of our ways of knowing, so somatic knowing, intuitive knowing, our emotional knowing, our cognitive knowing, our physical knowing, and then using a therapeutic approach that addresses all of these ways of knowing in order to move beyond our place of stuckness, as you referenced it. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. Well said.
So I love that idea of continuing to spiral in order to spiral out and be more conscious of the way that we integrate in our world.
That's
fantastic.
Correct.
We're going to be moving to the close of the show here in about a minute or so. Is there anything else, Dr. Mull, that you wanted to say before we closed out today's conversation?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's always fun to talk about the more philosophical aspects of my work, and it's often what I teach people in the beginning of our work together to set a tone. So I really appreciate the audience listening, and hopefully it will inspire people for their own growth.
Well, I imagine so, and you've given us so many great references and resources. This was a really fantastic show. People can walk away with lots of things that they can do their own learning around. Get on the internet, Google all the names that you've referenced. Lots of great information was shared today. So today we discussed clinical psychologists, licensed professional counselor, and certified trauma specialists. If you have any questions after today's show, you can contact Dr. Mull at DrHarriet. Mall, Dr. Harriet Mull at gmail.com. Dr. Mull, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your very important perspectives. It was a fantastic show. I learned a lot as well. We will post the links for Dr. Mull's contact information, and all the resources that she mentioned will be on our website, thestarlingcenter.org, on the radio tab after today's show. Please join me next week when I speak with Cheryl Jones, host of the program Good Grief, here on Voice America. Thank you for tuning in. This is Stacey Starling. Remember, you can go to our show links on my Voice America host page. There you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit us at starlingcenter.org.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Murmuration, Critical Transitions, and Transformation. Please join your host, Stacey Starling, for another edition next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll answer more of your questions next week.